This episode of The Huddle is brought to you by the Athletic Club Oakland, my go-to sports bar in the East Bay. Look, this will be a shock to no one. I love watching sports, and I love it even more while at a sports bar. But to be honest, there is a long period of time where I just couldn't find one I actually liked. I'd find a spot that had TVs, but the food sucked ass, or a place that had good food, but they wouldn't show the game I wanted, and the inside felt dark and depressing. It was always some trade-off or sacrifice, and that's finally done now. The ACO is exactly what I'm looking for without sacrifice. They have a huge space, including an outdoor spot where they shut down an entire street and called it the Town Gardens. They have more than 100 televisions, which can and will show every game you ask for, and they have great food. The ACO has everything you need to comfortably watch your favorite team in any sport at any time with passionate fans. I love it, and I'm pretty damn sure you will too. The Athletic Club Oakland, where sports fans get everything they want every day they want it.
We're going to bring y'all to our huddle.
You are in.
Always huddle with me.
Bram, no Marcus today, at least not up front here, but with me per usual, my master of all things video and sound, Maxime.
How's it going?
Maxime, I am fired up to announce they're rejoining us after way too long. In fact, in an appearance I have been waiting for at least a week, you're the co-host of the Morning Roast on 95.7 The Game, a man whose knowledge, passion, and talent has turned him into one of the brightest voices on the sporting airwaves, and a guy who is at the forefront of trying to get the nickname Windex rolling for Kevon Looney, Mr. Joe Butcher Boy Shasky. What's going on, Joe?
Oh my God. I'm exhausted and ready. Exhausted from the King series and ready for Lakers LeBron. Like, this is God, let's go.
It's so crazy how fast this turnaround is. Like, I want to spend this day like dancing on the King's graves, yeah, and like really celebrating, but they're playing tomorrow, dude. Like, we have no time in between at all here.
I know. And it's got to be, if you're just a television executive, I know we don't care who we have. Bull. Like, you know, you care. This is LeBron and the Lakers brand, like two giant brands, LeBron brand, Laker brand merging together. And then you have Steph Curry brand with the Warrior brand. I mean, this is a match made in heaven.
It's a holy war. I was thinking today, so like over the last few years, as the dynasty has progressed, I've learned to hate all these teams.
Yes.
You know, I've learned to hate Houston for a while.
Yes.
I learned to hate the Clippers for a while. I learned to hate Memphis for a while. Shit, the last week, I learned to hate Sacramento for a minute. But there's this inset, fuck the Lakers, that has been true for me forever, since Cohan, this entire time. And that we finally get to weaponize it, you know, now in a playoff series is amazing. But I tell you what, so a bunch of forward-looking questions. A couple looking backwards, and let me start here. You are the only person, Joe, I think this is true. Take this hopefully as the compliment it's intended, okay, who is maybe as crazy as I am, you know, who takes this shit as hard and as neurotically and as like emotionally imbalanced on a game day. So that's all just a lead up to take me through the range of emotions you went through yesterday, dude. Like, what does that look like for you?
Okay. Well, I got to go back to Friday night. I get word that we got tickets Friday night, last minute. I was going to have my brother and the kids over, and I go, Pat, I got tickets to the game last minute. I mean, literally 3 o'clock. Game starts at 5. Okay. Oh. I'm like, hey, can you go to the game tonight? He's like, I've never been to a Warrior playoff game, and I've never been to Chase. I'm like, what? Let's go. We're going. Right. So he shows up and we go to the game and my brother is ready to scream his ear off. I take him to the gatehouse to go meet Mully and all them. And Mully waves him into the gatehouse and he goes, it was like Jesus was welcoming me into the gate of heaven. Because this is Chris Mullin, for Christ's sake. And he's working with my partner and he comes in. Mayor London Breed, the San Francisco mayor, is walking out. Mr. Fab is to the right. My brother just popped a gummy. He is out of his mind. He's looking around and he's like, I can't believe we're here. I'm thinking like, yeah, no shit. We're at a freaking Warrior playoff game. This is incredible. And I thought we were going to dance on their graves. Like, I really did. The energy in the building pregame, we were ready for the Warriors to do anything. And this whole like narrative about Chase Center wasn't rocking. Let me tell you this. I was there. If they would have just hit back-to-back shots or gotten back-to-back stops, that place was ready to have the roof come off. It was a Friday at 5 o'clock and people were loaded. If you don't think that crowd was ready to pop off, you're tripping. So like, we lose that game. I was furious. It's one of the biggest eggs. I mean, it reminded me of the Giants losing in 2002 in game six, where it's like, I don't know if you can come back from this. Yeah. Like, and a totally different fashion. They got their ass kicked. And I'm watching. I'm right behind 40 Water. And I'm watching Jordan Poole. And I'm watching how this bench has reacted. And I'm losing my – so I am furious Friday night. Saturday, I can't believe they laid that egg. Oh, my God. Everywhere I'm going, Little League, I had to do an MC event for St. Finbar, a little school and stuff. Everyone's like, what the hell did we watch? I wake up Sunday morning, okay? I went to bed at like 9:30 Saturday night. I wake up at like 3:50 on Sunday morning, and I couldn't go back to bed. I had so much nervous energy, so much anxiety. I just pop out of bed like the Undertaker. I go in the shower. I cook up some coffee, and I just started cleaning the house. I did all of the towels. I laundried everything. I cleaned everything up. I had so much nervous energy. I couldn't even sit down and play video games and relax. I was so amped up. So that's how I started my morning Sunday. And then I pretended like I was going to have the blanket over me and like, oh, I'll just relax me and the dog. The dog's sick right now on the bed and we'll just hang out. It took about 14 seconds until that first Clay turnover. And I jumped off the couch. I'm screaming and yelling. I'm a lunatic. This team, I was not ready for the dynasty to be over.
When did you calm down? Fourth quarter, second half? Like when did the sense of, okay, we got this?
About 15 points up with about 6 minutes to go. I was like, all right, we almost can't fuck this up. Like that's where I was at. The sequence when Malik Monk hit that and one right before Clay hit the 3-point, or I guess 4-point play, the three that was a foul. It was still in the balance. Yes. They cut it to like 6 points right there. And everybody's like, oh no, don't not close this quarter properly. So it's just, and now we get to Steph. I've had the luxury of watching the end of Joe Montana, the whole entire Steve Young thing, Barry Bonds, Will Clark. We watched Barry Bonds and so many great, great, great players. Ricky Henderson. We watched Kobe. We've watched LeBron. We watched Michael Jordan. At least I have in my era. And I'm Magic. You know, this dude is a one of one. Steph Curry is Montana, Wilt, Barry Bonds, Jerry Rice, all rolled into one. He's the most incredible player I've ever seen. Montana might get 30 dropbacks and 30 throws. Okay, that's if they're lucky. Steph might do 15 things in a quarter. There was one play that was circulating around. There was like seven unbelievable things he did on the one play before he hit the finger roll, you know, after like six misses. I'm sorry. I'm just losing my mind.
And he got fouled like 1,000 times on the way in. Let's see. Working backwards. All right. We'll start with Steph, and there's going to be a lot of Steph content
today. Sorry.
You can imagine. No, fuck yeah, man. This is exactly what I'm looking for. But the thing that stuck out to me about Steph, and again, we'll revisit this, but it was when he celebrated the made free throw. You know, he'd missed those free throws. So this guy is in the midst of a 50 spot in game seven. Where, you know, this is the stuff of fucking legends, man. And even then, he has the wherewithal to joke, to be light about this. You know, that's not the – even in all the times I saw Barry Bonds do something incredible, he was never light during a moment. Serious. You know, that never entered it. But just to give you a sense of my crazy fucking day – so my kid turned 8 years old on the day of the big game, on game fucking seven. And one of the things she literally asked me is, Daddy, don't watch any basketball during my party because you get weird when the Warriors lose. And, you know, fuck, man, factually accurate. And so we're having this pool party. And we go up there, and I'm barbecuing these hot dogs. And, I'm being sweet for my kid. And she means the world to me. And so, like, I'm not watching it. But internally, it's eating me alive, dude.
Agonizing.
Like, the fact that people out there know what the outcome is, and I don't.
Ugh.
That either there's this incredible celebration, or my favorite superheroes are dead. Like, whatever it is, I can't stand it. And I don't have anyone to talk to. And at one point, this guy, they're pseudo-friendships, right? They are, we've gotten to know the parents of these other people now, but I don't know them super well.
Yeah.
And this guy comes up, he's just trying to make conversation. And he goes, so... game seven birthday party, and I flash on him, Joe. I was like, it's not my choice. I didn't pick her fucking birthday day. It's just,
does he have any clue how diehard you are?
I'm wearing like eight pieces of fucking Warriors. I got a hat, my fucking shirt, my shorts, like all this shit. Then we come home. I've got it on tape delay. I'm watching, and we have another party later in the day for my kid we got to go to. So I have to smash it into a 90-minute period. I lock myself in the back. I'm watching by myself, screaming through a closed door. My father-in-law's in the other room. I've already seen the game, and I'd never calm down. They're up 18 with 3 minutes left. I don't remember. Somebody scored. I was like, we're going to fucking lose this. I'm by myself, Joe. So
and you didn't look at your phone? No one told you?
Nothing.
How did in 2023, how did you do that?
So kept the phone gone. The phone was not in my pocket. Gave it to my wife. So there's no way I could catch any notifications, anything like that. And then, I mean, every single person I made eye contact with, I was like reading their soul. You know, like, what are you trying to tell me? Is this a, but no, got through it. And it was ultimately this cathartic, incredible experience. But man, the lead up, I don't know. I don't feel like it's a healthy way to experience this shit. But I tell you what.
It's the best way. Like the only, look at sports in the playoffs. I don't care what sport. No, it's equal parts unbelievably exciting and riddled with anxiety. And I want it no other way. It's the greatest feeling in the world. Not television doesn't do that. You know, maybe watching your kids compete in sports will do that to you or perform on a stage. Like you feel powerless watching it. You know what I'm saying? Like when it's a family member, but this is why sports is the best.
I can tell you, although to be fair, she hasn't gotten into any stakes scenarios, but I've watched my daughter play soccer multiple times. Love watching her play. No anxiety. She's terrible, dude. I'm never have to worry about it in any way, which I guess is a upside. I don't know. I've never had this and I hope I never will.
Yeah.
But if someone said, look, there's a chance you're going to lose all of your money tomorrow. You're going to check your bank account and you might be fucking bankrupt. The feeling I would have when I was actually going to check it is what I feel like before I turned on that game 7. Like it was all like angst and ugliness. And then you check the bank account and you have $50 million. You know, it all comes through. But let's jump in, boys. Glass half full. Joe, you remember this. You look back at Hoop You Like or Warriors and give me something you like and didn't. Maxine, we haven't heard from you, so I'll turn it to you, man. Something you like or didn't from last night's big win?
50 points in a game 7? Come on. Come on, Stephen Curry is the greatest. But I'll give you one thing further because that's obviously the thing that everybody's going to say. It's that he did it with one turnover. It's that he did it after having what, you know, from the Shams Charania, Marcus Thompson report was, an all-time locker room speech before the game, you know, after being up all night and galvanizing the team in a way that had Jonathan Kuminga clapping it up on the bench, you know, literally bringing the whole team together. I mean, it was a masterclass on and off the court. It was an absolute joy to watch.
I'll add and get one of these videos ready, man. Start with the one where he said, light the beam. You know what I love about Steph? His very unique combination of undeniable classiness and undeniable pettiness. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen those two things smash together. And some videos came out from last night. One is him screaming, light the beam. And if we've got that, let's go ahead and show it. Here he is to finish out the game. And boom, there it is. Faking light the beam for Sacramento. And then the other one, show the y'all ain't ready for this shit. While he's on
that one was great.
Huge heater. Steph the Christian, right? The baby-faced assassin on his way back to the fucking bench has this to say to Sacramento's crowd. Let's see if we get it. There it is. Y'all ain't ready for this shit. Hell of angry. So let's go, dude. Just everything about this man, Joe. He's brought so much joy into my life. Like, I don't, outside of someone I'm related to, I don't think anyone has been this joyful, you know, has brought this kind of entertainment to me on a, day-by-day basis.
He is Lincecum. He's Jerry Rice. Like, there are certain players that when you watch them play, you smile, right? You know what I mean? Like, you can't help but love them. They're very unique. Like, as much as I love Bonds, I don't know, smile was the first thing. Like, he did so many great things, but like, he was like a man on a mission. When I watched Lincecum, I was like, I'm watching a comet. I'm watching something that is only going to come around once in a blue moon. You know what I mean? And like, he's unbelievable. But I'm going to give you my one thing. Forget Steph, because that's so obvious. So obvious. Kevon Looney being maybe remembered as more impactful than Andrew Bogut was not something I had on my bingo card 2 years ago. Like, think about that. Andrew Bogut, like, whether you liked him, didn't like him, loved him, hated him, like, he complicated individual. You can't deny that he wasn't one of the seminal pieces that changed the Warriors organization forever on a variety of fronts. He was great for the Warriors. Why do I feel like what I'm watching with Kevon Looney is more impactful? And that's not a knock on Bogut. I think it's more like a testament to the heart and soul of Kevon Looney. And I freaking love this guy. Where would they be? I can't believe this coming out of my mouth. Where would they be without Kevon Looney?
Completely fucked is where they would be. I've said in the past, the most soul-sucking thing that can happen against you is an offensive rebound. You know why I was wrong about that? You know what's more soul-sucking? 2, 3, 4 offensive rebounds in the course of a fucking single offensive possession. And the fact that it's us doing that, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about this again in a second here, but Steph was on an island, boys. You know, nobody was there to help him out with the exception of Loon. You know, every time Steph couldn't deliver, Loon would give him a second, third, fourth opportunity. And it was just incredible because he deserves a shout out. The other thing I liked is, my boy in Sacramento, the fan in the orange Warriors jersey, who everyone is commenting on.
My wife's cousin. That,
but he, I mean, dude, he was all of us. You know, like
he's the best. He was the best. In the orange freaking Warrior jersey from the We Believe era. I mean, look at him screaming in the high. If you didn't do that during the game, you're not a real fan. Bram, I got to send you a video of my boy Rocco. His wife Instagrams him on the side without him watching while he's watching games, and he's got two little girls, and you can hear them in the background, "Daddy, are you okay?" And he's yelling at the TV. He's like, "Are you kidding me? Somebody make a play!" And it's how we all watch. And the way that man right there in that arena was screaming was how every one of us screamed when any one of these Warriors did something positive.
That's exactly right. And before I told you I was watching by myself in the room, that's a lie. I was watching with that guy. The second they showed him, I was literally like, man, this animal. Fucking guy. I said that out loud to nobody. I'm in that room by myself. I was like, man, this fucking guy.
Unreal.
Let's go. So on the off chance you're listening, dude, we really, really respect you. Something I don't like, at least I'll throw this out here. Actually, you know what? Before I ask you that, or before I say this, let me ask you this. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been in an opposing arena in whatever, in any gear, and then going big like that gentleman just did?
So I've got a couple of them. I don't know, Maxine, if you want to get in here, but Boston Game 3 and Game 4 last year. Right. All right. Game three, I'm by myself. There wasn't much to cheer for. It was a tight game, but I'm by myself. Top rafters, Sean Sully from Sullyburg and this guy from there. And they're all just giving me, "Fuck you, Draymond," in my face, like the whole time. I'm by myself. There are no Warrior fans for Game 3 because that was a Wednesday game. Friday, there was a couple of more. I mean, if you'd have told me there were 52 Warrior fans in that entire arena, I'd have believed you. Like, I'm dead. And that's including Warrior employees. Friday night, by myself, yellow San Francisco Warriors Wilt jersey. I was rocking it. And I'm jumping up. And so what did Curry have? 43, 44, whatever he had. And I'm jumping up like, "Let's go, let's go." And everybody, "Sit the F down, sit down." And I'm going like this. You know, I don't even look back. I'm not even going to look back. Then the other one, which was just... I thought Boston was going to be bad. Philadelphia, NFC Championship game this year with Bonte. We did it in LA, but we took over. Niner fans took over for the SoFi game. This year, McCaffrey scores that touchdown, and that place goes dead silent. I don't know if you guys remember that. McCaffrey broke like 6 plays, and Bonte and me are jumping up. "Let's go, let's go." And beers are just flying at us, just getting thrown at us in our direction. About 7 or 8 49er offensive plays later, Josh Johnson got crumbled to the ground, and we were both sitting there completely befuddled. But yes, I've done that, and it's both scary as hell and freaking amazing. And I'm telling you, there's nothing like a road game. There's nothing like it.
Incredible use of the word befuddled. I was very impressed by that. I have never done it in a professional context. The closest I did, I'm playing JV for Skyline High School. It's my first year there.
Okay.
We, you know, the JV team plays first, so we win, and then we're now watching our boys in varsity. We're in Richmond, and we're talking hella shit. I mean, as much shit as you can possibly fucking talk to anyone around us. And then that fucking game ends in a riot. Literally, there's a fucking fight at the end, and the fans now storm the fucking court. We're there, and I'm the guy who's been talking all this shit. I'd like to tell you that, like, I, you know, it was like this big, but I've never run to a locker room faster than when that fucking happened. Like, there's never been, like, anybody that's ever gone faster to a fucking room than I went at that exact moment. And so that's about as close to this scenario as I've gotten. Maxine, do you have any?
You know what's sad is that, like, you, not only the fighting at the end, but like when you are in an opposing arena, that you have to be scared for your you know, your safe being rooting for your team. Like that makes me sad. I don't know. Makes me sad.
Props to Sacto fan. That guy, you know, like in the clip that we just saw, it didn't look like he was in any mortal danger or anybody said anything. And you know what? Now that we've won and I feel comfortable about saying this, props to Sacramento. That's a young, talented team. They remind me of the Warriors in 2013, absolutely, that like series we had against San Antonio. So,
absolutely,
you know, good for them. Also, fuck them forever. And I'm glad that we've moved on, boys, to our golden questions. Joe, this is our mailbag. It always deals with the Warriors, occasionally gets personal. And here's the first quote: Butcher Boys. I know we have a huge Lakers series coming up. I'm going to pause just for a second. I mean, I love having Butcher Boy on. Does it have to be named Butcher Boys? I mean, we have a fucking, like, the show is called The Huddle. Anyways, Butcher Boys.
Sorry,
we have a huge Lakers series coming up, but give me one last look back. How would you answer these quick hitters?
Okay.
So they've given us a couple of follow-ups here, and here's the first, and it's kind of an exciting one. Was Steph's Game 7 50-burger the most impressive playoff game in his career?
What? No. It's Game 4 in Boston for me. For me, it's Game 4 in Boston. And then I would also say Game 5 in Oracle when the first championship. I think we've forgotten he scored 37, and in the second half, he outplayed LeBron. Those two, because those are the finals. Those are the finals. And so I elevate those. I also think sneakily, Game 6 and Game 7, we remember OKC Game 6, Klay Thompson. Steph was equally amazing. Equally freaking amazing. And in Game 7, he was amazing as well on one leg. It's a top five Curry performance. But what's crazy, he's got so many of them. Like, pick your poison, guys. Like, seriously. The 37 off the bench against Portland in the second half?
I'm back. Maxime, how would you answer that? Best playoff game?
It's tricky. So no. And it's because it's a first round playoff series, right? LeBron was just quoted as saying, like, the stakes get higher every time. This is a young team. I keep on telling them, like, you know, it's going to get ratcheted up. We made it out of the first round. Now we go to the second round. So, you know, the stakes are not quite there yet. And at the same time, like, man, I was so nervous. There was a part of me that was already trying to sort of salve my feelings around, like, is this the end? You know, is, like, trade the house, right? Like, is this all over? You know, and Steph was aware of that, you know, and I think that does sort of recontextualize this a little bit, that we were so close to something going so horribly wrong. It's just the first round. I get it. But for him to come out the way he did and play so emphatically, like, yeah, I mean, I'd say top five makes some sense. Joe laid out some really good examples. But yeah, it's certainly not a normal first round playoff series performance.
I'll push back. Fuck both you boys. I say it is. All right. So look, objective. There is no objective stat on this. This is 1,000% subjective. And of course, a first round game doesn't have the stakes that Game 4 performance had. Of course. Also, though, that wasn't the only thing at stake. You guys have both talked about if they had lost that game, we are talking about the end of this group of people we have spent an incredible 10 years with. Much more than a fucking first round loss, boys. We're talking about, you know, Steph as Steph. We're talking about this core probably breaking up. But that's not the end of the subjective analysis. Malik Monk called these fuckers old. All of us. Okay, yes, they were. They looked gassed in Game 6. De'Aaron Fox is racking up this future that we can all palpably fucking feel. Sacramento is on our ass. All of these things are going into this game. And instead of coming up anything but legendary, Steph drops a 50 spot on their ass by himself.
And playing a way that Luka Doncic plays every night, which you never see Steph play that way.
38 shots, dude. And he made the call. You know, he could tell that Clay didn't have it, that JP couldn't be fucking trusted, that even Wiggins didn't want it. You know, and so with all of those things, and this is, so there's some recency bias, but with all these things and all the vulnerability I felt going into that, for him to have answered it with a 20-point win basically on his back, you know, maybe not the best. But when I'm putting up the Mount Rushmore of appearances, this is one of the faces I'm carving. You know, there's fucking no question.
It doesn't this, like, when you think of just individual Bay Area performances in the playoffs, like Mad Bum Game 7, you know, you think of Lincecum in the playoffs against Atlanta. Like, there's these moments in time. Kaepernick against the Green Bay Packers. Yep. Sleepy Floyd in a series they lose. You know what I mean? But, you know, Sleepy Floyd is Superman. Like, even Weber, you know, against the Phoenix Suns, like that three-game set where we got our teeth kicked in. Like, there are Baron Davis, right? Like, there are certain moments. This one's going to live forever. I think we will remember this one because of the stakes, though. I think you are right.
We are way too similar, Joe. Before you finished it, but as you said Sleepy Floyd, all I could hear in my head was Tim Roy going, Sleepy Floyd is Superman. So nicely played there.
Which was against the Lakers.
Factually accurate.
The Lakers.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
This one, I actually want your guys' take on as well. So we're looking back at that Kings series. Quote, whose reputation did this series help and hurt the most?
I've got a couple here. I think the one who got hurt the most is clearly Domantas Sabonis. I mean, Sabonis' stock couldn't be any lower. He got relegated to Mozgov status in the sense we were playing 4-on-5 offense. Or excuse me, they were playing 4-on-5 offense, and all his numbers felt hollow. Like, everything felt hollow. And when he was not on the floor, they were better. They were better with him on the bench. Like, that is, I don't even know how that can be debated. In terms of rising, I would have said De'Aaron Fox at the beginning, middle of the series. I think Kevon Looney. Like, because De'Aaron Fox is already going to be star status. Okay, you got him in superstar status, fine. Like, everyone's got different tiers. To me, there are still a lot of people out there that, like, didn't know who Kevon Looney was, which is insane. His stock is through the roof right now.
Yeah. No, and his contract and everything that goes through that. I agree. So if they had lost this, my answer to you would have been Jordan Poole, would have been the guy whose reputation took the nastiest hit. I think we would have had an offseason.
How about Dre?
Falling for his head. Draymond could have been an ugly take as
well. I mean,
well,
he wasn't great yesterday. No, he was good, but not great.
But they won. So we it is Sabonis. He's going to have to suck on his fraudulent reputation for at least this offseason and see whether or not he can resurrect it. I didn't get the feeling that, like, every time he checked out of the game, when they showed that fan base, they didn't look particularly upset, dude. They were better with Sabonis off the floor. I love the Loon answer. So, I mean, the easy one is De'Aaron Fox, and fuck, man, great player. I mean,
he's sick.
He's out. Goddamn. How many times did he so answer a three by us? Every time we start making runs, how many times did De'Aaron fucking Fox pull up and hit the three? But because I'm a homer and because I love the take, I'm going to double down on Loon. Let's go.
Can I give you guys an undercover too for diehard Warrior fans that have been like in on this team all year? Forget the stars. DiVincenzo, I can't get any lower coming out of that series. God bless him. He one of my favorite players throughout the regular season. Guy couldn't hit anything in this series. He was god awful. And out of nowhere, off a milk carton, Moses Moody is a reliable agent come game seven. Like, I was literally screaming, I think I have to go Moody over DDV for the next two games coming out of game five. I can't believe I'm saying that.
You know what that's triggering for me? And I'm going to add this to Steph's fucking resume. When everyone was calling him old, when everyone said it was over, the thing that I was screaming to nobody in particular is that at this stage of their career, Steph should not be expected to anchor a 6-7 man rotation. You know, it's supposed to be 9 people, but Andre, nothing. JMG, nothing. Dante Kuminga, nothing. Jordan Poole, nothing. Kuminga, nothing. All of these people who are supposed to be taking a load off his fucking shoulders didn't show up to the series at all, you know, and yet and still, despite being gassed because he had too much weight, he just, you know, he accelerated. He was fucking better than any of us thought. Maxime, take this final one. What Kings player ultimately did you sports hate the most? And why is it Malik Monk?
Oh, dude, he's sick.
It's not Malik Monk for me. I'm very impressed and very annoyed by him, but to me it's still Sabonis. The way that he collapsed was so frustrating for me. The way that he kind of got under Draymond's skin, because the story of this series ultimately, game by game, the 50 spot from game 7, whatever, right? But it was Draymond. It was Draymond getting suspended after the flagrant 2. And it was the things that led up to that that were entirely Sabonis getting up in his grill. Like, I ride for my boys, you know, like Draymond is one of my favorite players. And depending on, you know, when you ask me, he is my favorite player. And so Sabonis instigating Draymond to the degree that he did means that I hate Sabonis for all time.
The reason why it's Monk for me, so Sabonis is a great fucking answer.
It is.
Sabonis losing, you know, like all those things we were just talking about, all of his lack of success made it more palatable for me. It's like a Bond villain who I hate for a while, but they lose, so there's some comeuppance. Monk was like fucking Thanos. He was a villain who was fucking winning. You know, like he's doing all that posturing and all that three shit, all the fucking mean mugging, and he was having success. So it was just killing me, man. Who did you hate, Joe?
This is going to be so random. Terrence Davis coming out of nowhere at the end of the series and hitting shot after shot and then hacking the ever-living shit out of Steph Curry. It was driving me insane. Yes. I'm like, what? Like, even Trey Lyles, like, okay, he had a great game in game one and then he came back around in game six and he was really good. I wasn't even having Terrence Davis. Like, when they went to Terrence Davis, I was like, oh, dude, they are panicking. They're going so off the map on this one. And then he was hitting buckets and I was like, he hit three threes. I couldn't believe it. And then he took Keegan Murray off the floor and inserted him again. And I go, oh God, thank God he was ice cold in the second half. But like, you got to be kidding me. Another guy, real quick, another guy who I'm high on coming out of that series, if I was looking from the Kings' perspective, Keegan Murray was so bad the first four games for a rookie to rebound and have that kind of impact game 5, 6, and 7. I was very impressed with him because he looked unplayable in the first four games.
You and I both. And they all, you know, they got torched when they picked him. And he ended up being a hell of a selection
for
him.
Stud.
The Davis take is a phenomenal one. Do you guys see the highlight? I shouldn't say highlight. The replay of him grabbing Steph's the top of his head after that three-pointer, like literally rubbed the top of his head. It was the strangest, like, caress. I don't even know how to fucking describe it. How is that allowed? Why was that not a much bigger deal? Even you just saying the names, Dave, it's gotten me all angry. So, I mean, we definitely have to include his name. All right. Let's look forward, boys, because we have a huge series ahead of us. Here's our next question. Quote, we got the matchup that everyone wanted in LeBest v. LeBron. Let me pause. Normally, I don't like any LeBron references for Steph, but I'll take LeBest. I like that a lot. Quit picking it back up. Please give us a huddle-style preview of the series. And then we got a bunch of questions here. Here's the first. Joe, why can Golden State win this series?
I think guard play is so important in the modern NBA, and I look at their guard play, and it feels very erratic, okay? You don't know what you're going to get from Schroeder down the stretch. Defensively, he's a turnstile. D'Angelo Russell is so hot and cold. Like, do you guys have any idea, like, who they can roll with either guy in the fourth quarter, right? Vanderbilt, I think, is a really good defender. His shot's been off. Yeah. And then, like, they really don't have, like, Austin Reeves, I'm sorry, the guy's going to turn back into a pumpkin at some point. And I think that, having GP2 and Wiggins and even Klay Thompson going, like Kevin Huerter, I thought highly of Kevin Huerter. Kevin Huerter was thoroughly outplayed by Klay, and Klay was mediocre. By Klay standards, like, we all expected a better version of Klay Thompson. He was mediocre, and he thoroughly outplayed Kevin Huerter. You know what I mean? Like, that's how high the bar is from Klay Thompson. So I think we're going to be good. Look, the key is this. If they allow Anthony Davis to have four great games, they're in trouble. They just need to limit him to 2.5, 3 great games. If they do that, they should have a shot.
Let's see, in no particular order. You guys remember that movie, The Truman Show, with Jim Carrey?
Oh, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Okay. So for the people who hadn't seen it, Jim Carrey plays just a random person and is the first reality show, and they've created an entire world around him that he doesn't know that he's in a reality world, but everyone else is keeping this world up around him.
Bram, are you an X-rated rapper fan?
Sure.
Okay. Unforgiven. He uses the very end when he's in the boat looking up at the sky. And he's like screaming and yelling. There's a song with X-rated where they use that at the beginning from the Truman Show. And I always think about X-rated when someone brings that up.
Well, our connection here is Austin Reeves reminds me of the Truman Show. He's fine, but somewhere along the line, fucking Clutch decided this guy was a fucking all-star. And then ESPN picked up suit, and everyone, they created this world around him where Austin Reeves, rather, is incredible and is this fucking all-star. Bullshit. Now Austin Reeves fucking believes it. Now he's wearing one of those leg fucking warmers on only one leg and making all these plays that suggest he really believes in himself. I call bullshit. It's a Truman Show scenario, and he's going to run into reality close enough. Why do the Warriors have a chance to win this? And I'm going to bleed this into the next question, which is, who is the best player in the series? It's because they have the best player in the fucking series in Steph Curry. He will give them a shot to win every goddamn series. Certainly one where he's going to be matched up against with D'Angelo Russell or Dennis Schroeder. And I it's only a matter of time. Maybe this is me being crazy, but I believe in Dante finding him. I believe in Poole, maybe somebody else. I even think we might see Kuminga back in this.
I think you have
the size, yeah. You know,
not that it resets, Bram, not because like you don't just reset, but you do give another opportunity. Like we got to the end of that series and it felt like, dude, DDV might be unplayable the rest of the way. You get to the end, like, GP2, we got to pick and choose our spots. JMG, unplayable. Kuminga, unplayable. Jordan Poole, like, unless it's alongside Steph, almost unplayable. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I think you have to open the book back up in game one and two and just give guys a chance to make themselves unplayable or not.
And I think that the way that NBA playoffs works and how series are so specific, they can come in and give them that reset button. You know,
I like think that, JMG's like, going to get a chance.
I hope so.
I think he is.
I hope so. I'd love to see Kuminga, and I'd love to see at least some semblance of him participating in this fucking series. But do I think they have a chance? Of course I do. Maxime, take this next one because it's a fun question. Will Draymond Green flirt with LeBron during this series? Right. So we've seen, dude, they have a friendship. He went to his wedding. We saw that interaction that had Andre go and make fun of him on the bench, you know? So during this series, do you think that Draymond will continue the overt, batting of eyes towards LeBron?
Bram, you're breaking my brain, man. This is getting real confusing because I'm going through all these layers. The story was that Steph called Draymond because they were both awake at 3:45 in the morning, right? And Draymond was like, I'm going to give him the speech. And Steph says, no, I'm going to do the speech, right? And you see Draymond and Steph's relationship is so far beyond what we understand, right? So far beyond the superficial narratives that we hear. And then Steph's out there smiling with the free throws, right? He's like the most sort of cavalier superstar as he's put in. So like, Steph doesn't care. And if Steph doesn't care, then he at least understands that Draymond is setting up himself for sort of a post-basketball or post-playing basketball career. And that sort of stuff matters, right? So Steph might be like, sure, go get yours as long as you're supporting the team on the court. Like, who really cares? It like the layers that are happening, right? It's like it's not chess on the basketball court alone. It's like chess across the whole NBA. And I don't know what's the most important there for their careers. I really have no idea, man. I didn't even answer the question. I don't know. You broke my brain.
Do you think Draymond texted LeBron you up after he got the text from fucking Steph just to talk about it? I don't. I think there will be some reminders that they're friends. You know, I don't know if we'll get like the magic Isaiah kiss at half court thing that we used to get, you know, way back when. But there's going to be a couple of moments when we will be like, oh yeah, they went to each other's wedding. But I don't think it'll be as overt as we've seen during the regular season.
I'm predicting, just because I know how he gets, one flagrant one on LeBron James by Draymond Green. If I was sitting the over under, I would go over the half.
Here, keep the mic. Same topic, basically. If you had to pick two players most likely to get into a fight during this series, who would it be?
Oh, two players most likely. You know what? Don't sleep on Andrew Wiggins hating LeBron James. This is a guy. Let me tell you why. I've had this hypothesis for a while, and I've heard from people behind the scenes that this is actually more accurate than we want to give up. Imagine being 18 years old and being drafted to the Cleveland Cavaliers, and LeBron returns and he says, I don't even want to play with you. You're going to set me back. Almost the way the Warriors viewed Wiseman, but instead of even taking the Wiseman pick, you draft him and then trade him before playing one game with him, and you go get Kevin Love, who also wasn't good enough to play with LeBron James. I mean, essentially, like, I think he harbors a ton of professional anger toward LeBron James for all of those reasons. If you go back and look, all the times the Warriors have faced LeBron, Wiggins is so locked in.
Yeah.
It's weird. I'm telling you, I know he's so mild-mannered. I think Wiggins is one of those silent assassin types. He'll snap on you.
Dude, it's not weird at all. You're talking about that I'm coming home article.
You know, right.
When LeBron announced that he was going back to Cleveland and he wrote this big article talking about all the upsides that he'd go and play with, they had the number one pick and he didn't. Everyone knew it was going to be Andrew, and he didn't mention one fucking syllable at Andrew, and they traded him out for Kevin Love, exactly as Joe just said. So I can see some animosity there. What I'm hoping for, and this will not happen, but Austin Reeves, GP2, I think that would just like bring more pleasure for my viewing experience than I can possibly imagine. Maxime, who's your guess? Two players who might fight.
Noah in the chat is saying Austin Reaves and Jordan Poole, which I think would be pretty interesting too, especially because, right, like Jordan probably has some pent up anger that he would like to get out too, you know, from the last series and from the whole year. So I could see that going down.
Who's the most important player in this series, not named Steph or LeBron? I'll say the Lakers trainer. Fucking if Anthony Davis, when Anthony Davis gets hurt, we are fine. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and say that.
I'm going to say Hachimura from the Lakers, his length, and if he's hitting threes, I do think that presents some problems. I'm going to give you, I think it's Jordan Poole. I think the reason that game went seven, the series went seven, was Monk thoroughly outplayed Jordan Poole. Like that to me was the difference in the series. If Jordan Poole, the first quarter of the first game, the second quarter of the first game, Jordan was dynamic. He rolled his ankle. He never was the same. Playing too fast, turning it over. If he could just bottle it up a little and just play above average, that changes everything because the non-Steph minutes are crucial.
We need somebody else. I mean, so on the Warrior side, I was thinking the same thing. Either JP or DiVincenzo or maybe Jamichael Green, but they need somebody. We know what we're going to get from Steph. We know what we're going to get from Clay. We know what we're going to get from Dre. You know, there's some predictable sources of production. But we're going to need something from one of these guys who didn't give it to us in the previous series. And I'm thinking it's hopefully going to come. I'll say Dante more than Poole because I lost some confidence in JP over that last series, man. That one hurt my heart. Maxime, why can the Lakers win this series?
It's because of their athletic trainer. And I mean that it's Anthony Davis, right? We know what we're going to get from LeBron. We know he's not at his apex, but he's still putting in 20 rebound games, so a dude can still ball. But Anthony Davis is the X factor. And if he comes out ready to play, I mean, he's not going to shy away from Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, double teaming him in the post. He's the type of dude that can still get his. And it's a concern if he's going to play an all-star level, like Joe said, for four games, that's going to be a hell of a series.
I'm going to take D'Angelo Russell because I expect Anthony Davis to have some great games. D'Angelo to me is the big wild card because I got no idea what it you want to talk about a guy who's kind of shunned. I mean, he came to the Warriors and was traded for Andrew Wiggins and then watches Andrew Wiggins get all the love that Kevin Durant wanted. Like, it's kind of wild, the domino effect of all of them. So I'm going to go with D'Angelo Russell.
This answer is going to make me angry. The reasons the Lakers can win is because they took their shit seriously at the trade deadline and made their team a full team. They brought in Jared fucking Vanderbilt. They brought in Rui. They saw the various missing pieces and they addressed them. We did not. We didn't make those moves. And through the course of this, you know, these next six or seven games, I think we're going to get real frustrated with Vanderbilt specifically because he fits in perfectly. Other side is Lakers zagged. Everybody else went with ball movement, three-point shooting. The Lakers went big, you know, and if they destroy, I mean, Kevon Looney is another one of those players who's going to play a real big fucking role here because we're going to need every inch of his Loon God rebounding status if we're ultimately going to beat this team.
And Steph shoots poorly at Staples.
Yeah, I can't stand that. I hate that whole narrative. And I hate that it's true. You know what I mean? Like you keep saying like it's bullshit, but like, no, that's 100% true.
Yeah.
It's the boxing lights. It's not just Staples, right? Because he fucking plays against the Clips. All right. It's the Lakers and their stupid ass stadium style or, you know, boxing style lighting that they have. I've kept you longer than I said we would. So I'm going to make these quick hitters, real fast answers and we're out. All right.
Yeah.
Most hateable later or hateable Laker.
All time.
No, now this team. You can give
right
me all
now,
time
as well. LeBron. Can't stand LeBron. I mean, give me a break, dude. Like
not Austin. Come over kills me.
Look, I'll root for the white guys. All right. I admit it. I like to try hard white guys because I kind of envision myself as one of those. So, you know, while everyone else in America is canceling the white male, I am going to rock with them. Okay. It's LeBron. I can't
unexpected
stand
LeBron. Answer of the day. Maxime, most hateable.
I don't know. Now I'm still pretty. I think I'm gonna right now. I have love for LeBron, but as soon as the series starts, I think I'm gonna find myself pretty annoyed with him all over again. I'm gonna be reminded of everything, all of the times that we've gone up against LeBron. I mean, this is a classic showdown, and I hated him then. So why would I not hate him now?
Best coach. I'll go first on this one. Steve Kerr. Darvin Ham always looks confused to me. I'm sure he's not. I'm sure LeBron he knows exactly what he's doing. Every time they see him, every time we see him on the sideline, it looks like something's happened. He's not really sure it was allowed, but he doesn't know how to ask anyone if that's within the rules. So he just lets it go down.
Most hateable Laker all time for you, Bram and Maxime.
God, that's so tough. I'm going to give you like stupid answers. Like Mark Madsen used to fucking drive me crazy. I mean, like
Coach
just
Cal.
Real anger inducing fucking scenarios, man. LeBron will be a part of that list by the end of this, you know, like but that's, you know what? I'm going to give you Mark Madsen. I don't know why he used to reflect like in that way for me. And I know that you're a fan of the white American basketball player. So if I'm taking any shots at one of your favorite guys, my bad, but that was me. How about you?
Two names, and Maxine, I'll go to you after this. Ronnie Turioff and Derek Fisher, two Laker bums that the Warriors signed to get championship DNA. I hate them both so much.
You clearly don't remember how well Ronnie Turioff waved that motherfucking towel, dude. Nobody could wave a towel like Turioff waved his towel.
Couldn't say. And Rick Fox. I hated Rick Fox.
We all hated Rick Fox. Dude.
That's what I'm saying.
The actor. I don't even sure. Did he play basketball? I just remember him on various TV series. Yeah.
I'm from a slightly different era. So for me, it's Dwight Howard. There's just so much about how that dude operates in and around basketball that is antithetical to my way of life. And I wanted him to be so much more than he ended up being. So
I wanted the Warriors to get
just
him.
Said, Joe, is that we're old. I don't know if I needed to decode that for you, but that's essentially
Campbell. You just I hated fans. Elgin Campbell.
Who's going to... Who's going to have the best home court advantage?
Ooh, I'm actually going to say the Lakers because you know why? Laker fans are everywhere. Like they're like Cowboy fans. They will show up everywhere. Like we all know a couple of Laker fans that are from the Bay. I'm a Laker fan. We were already joking with my wife's family. This is the Filipino Civil War. I mean, this is the Lakers versus the Warriors. This might as well be a Filipino Civil War. So, you know, stake your flag now.
This is when they come out of the woodwork too. All those people who weren't fucking Laker fans for the last 8-9 years, suddenly they're going to be showing us their Laker tattoos and their shirts and, you know, like the banners they have at home, all that other bullshit, out they'll come. I agree with you, unfortunately. I believe in Chase Center. We are fairly loud, but the thing about Laker fan is when they lock in, they actually can make a difference for their team. They don't always, and you never know whether or not they're going to show up, but when they do show up, they can make a difference. All right, prediction, boys. Who wins and in how many games?
Warriors in six. Let's go.
Not a whole lot of conviction behind that, Maxime. It sounded like maybe you weren't positive.
No. It goes the other way. At this point, I feel like maybe, okay, so to be fair, right, this is the first time that our listeners are actually hearing me. So, right, so I should be saying that with a little bit more oomph. But in all of the text conversations that we've been a part of and all the text conversations that I've been having, it feels like over and over again, that's what everybody's saying. And it feels like a done deal, right? So I'm not saying it out of resignation, but rather just out of like, you know, beyond confidence.
Yeah, that let's go made it seem like you were talking yourself into it. But the follow-up, I think I believe. Warriors in six. Joe, what do you think?
I'm going to go Warriors in seven. I know how this thing's going to get officiated. I know that the Warriors are tired. They're going to have played 10 games in 19 days if it goes seven games. Okay? So, like, I'm preparing myself for a long, arduous, you know, series. They got no time in between Sunday and Tuesday night. If they get the split at home, that's about it. Like, that's what I'm looking for at this point. I'm talking about from a Warrior perspective. So I think this is going to be a long series. Mm-hmm. I really do. It's a clash of styles.
Bad news for me is I think the Warriors lose the first game. And I think there's going to be fucking freak out town. And I think there's going to be a hyperbolic response. And the Lakers are back and all that. And then also, I think Warriors in six. Let's fucking go. And then they're going to steal one in fucking Staples. And then they're going to ram it up their ass. And I also think we are not the older team. LeBron is much further in his career. There's no travel again. If we had to handpick the playoff path that the Warriors would take, this is it, dude. We have home court advantage. You know, we spend all year shitting the bed on the road to not have home court advantage. Doesn't matter. Here we are. We've got it.
Back-to-back road games in game five and seven. I can't believe it.
That is fucking exactly right. So Warriors in six. We'll see how this plays. This is going to be a barn burner, and a normal but maybe underlined reminder, if you're listening to this, enjoy this. Enjoy it. We may never have the kind of talent that Steph Curry is in our lives again. This may be the pinnacle. I'm not saying he's getting traded. I'm not saying he's going anywhere. But, you know, every year as he gets older, it's not like he's going to get better. And so while he occupies this brilliance, just soak in every fucking second. Another reminder, or at least piece of advice, don't have a kid's birthday party on a game seven. Giant mistake. You don't want to do that. You're going to piss off a lot of people, cost you years off your life. Just, you know, just take it from me.
Joe.
Thank you, dude. Look forward to this. Ever since we talked about when you were coming on, this was lived up to everything for everyone who needs way more Butcher Boy in their life. Where do they go?
ButcherBoy415 on Twitter, Instagram, you name it, Snapchat, you know, TikTok, and Morning Roast, 6 to 10 every morning, 95.7 The Game.
Phenomenal show. You know where to find us. You want to shoot us an email. Let us know we did a good job, bad job, any job. You can shoot that too.
Huddle at warriorshuddle.com.
Oh, we're also on social media. Twitter account is at Warriors Huddle. YouTube channel is also Warriors Huddle. And we are on Instagram, where Marcus is running that. And that one's at Warriors Huddle as well. With that in mind, fuck the Lakers. Go Warriors. Hopefully we'll see you real soon.
Good, good.